we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Show. This is Jen Dobell, and we have Allison Cole in station.
Hi there.
And Denise Swanson.
Happy Friday.
Today we're going to be having a feature interview with Anita Crines from Toronto Pig Save, and we'll be discussing her recent trial in regards to her criminal charges around feeding water to thirsty pigs on their way to slaughter. Allison, you went to the PNE recently. Do you want to tell us a story about that?
Yeah, so we're at the end of the summer now, and Labor Day is next week. It's September now, hard to believe. And anyways, during this time of the year, many Vancouverites associate the last kind of 2 weeks of summer with the Pacific National Exhibition, otherwise known as the PNE. And this is a big fair that a lot of people and tourists as well attend every year. In fact, over 900,000 people visit this fair every year. And what comes to mind when you think of the PNE? I know what comes to mind with for me is a lot of junk food, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and a lot of carnival rides, if you're into that. But also a large part of the PNE is that it hosts an annual animal agriculture fair. Mm-hmm. Now, at this event, animals in the agriculture industry, such as cows, pigs, goats, sheep, rabbits, and chickens, are put on display. They're judged on their aesthetic qualities, and then they're sent to slaughter. So the way this works is that if you attend the PNE, you'll see children there who are in the 4-H programs, and that's a program here, and I guess it's a Canadian program, and it's in the Lower Mainland here in the farming areas, where children are taught from a young age on how to raise animals who will be sold for slaughter and then human consumption, and then they take them around and parade them around the fair in an event that they have, and then they're judged, and then, like I said, they're sent to slaughter. So every year, if I'm at the PNE, I always make a point to visit the animals. And to me, I feel it's just really important for me to bear witness to their existence and to bear witness to what I think is an atrocity in our society. And I just want to go there to acknowledge and to see those animals who are going to be not in existence in a couple of weeks. So my experience in visiting the animals this year, I just wanted to talk about that a little bit. I only had a very short amount of time. I was actually working at the PNE a couple of weekends ago on its second day on a Sunday. I was playing two shows there with my band, and we had a break in between shows. So I only had 20 minutes, and I told my friend, I'm going to go see the animals to say goodbye to them before they're sent to slaughter. And she actually looked at me with this very shocked expression. And I was like, what? Like, what's so shocking, right, that I'm saying goodbye to them? And she was shocked because she didn't realize, she said, that they were going to be sent to slaughter. She'd seen the animals before. She said not for some years. But her, like many other people, enjoy going to see the animals at the PNE because, and especially taking their children, because children love to see animals. And as do adults as well, right? We get a lot of joy out of out of connecting with these animals. And you know, for example, they got like all those little baby chicks there that are just hatched out of their eggs and just like making that connection. But little do people know that these chicks are being sent either into the meat industry or the egg industry, and they're going to be used for consumption. And would those people and those children who connect with these little chicks want that to happen to them? Probably not. Anyways, I thought it was pretty obvious that that's, you know, this is an agri-fair, right? Like, it's for animal agriculture. That's the whole purpose of them. Mm-hmm. And she just acted like she just hadn't realized that that's why they were there. And I wonder if that's just sort of like the way that most people who are attending the PNE think, right? Like, they don't know.
I know I went there as a kid, and I had no idea that they were to be...
As a child, you wouldn't know.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And I don't think most people have any idea that roughly half of all chicks in the egg industry are killed right after birth, simply because they're male and don't lay eggs.
Yeah, that's there's many, many facets of the agriculture industry that people wouldn't realize,
and
right?
That they're ground up alive. Yeah. That's how they're killed.
Yeah, and the big, they always have a large mother pig who's just given birth with all her piglets, and they show the piglets drinking the mother's milk, right, in the mm-hmm. in the barn there. And they had that this time as well. There was about 10 little piglets just sucking her teats.
I saw that video. Yeah. Somebody went there and posted a bunch of videos.
I took a video too, but I can show you later. But anyways, that's normally not the case in the farming industry. Like, people don't know, like, that the mother pigs are put into these tight gestation crates. And not only that, like, mothers and children, they're separated from their babies, like, mm-hmm. after a young age, because it doesn't do them any good to be bonded with their children, especially for cows who produce milk, right? Because the whole mm-hmm. point is that they produce milk for their baby cows, and the baby cows are then taken away so that they can't drink the milk that we humans consume. So there's a lot of disconnect.
And may I just throw in that mm-hmm. milk is very unhealthy. So let's reconsider that.
It's healthy for baby cows.
Right. Not for us. And we have at least 14 plant-based milks now that we can choose.
You've counted.
14. I talk about this
stuff. I know there's just a lot. Yeah. Anyways. When we walked around, I just sort of made a point to talk to her about the animals as much as I could, you know, personifying them. And I made, you know, I myself just enjoyed making the personal contact with them, because I feel so bad for them. I feel like it's all I can do.
I know.
Right? Like, you can't do anything. I have before, I remember my sister and I, we talked to one of the children in the 4-H program who was taking care of one of the cows. He said, "This is my cow." And I said, "Oh, and so how," like something like, "how do you feel about your cow going to slaughter?" He says, "That's not going to happen." And he really, probably about a 7-year-old boy, like they're all going, all the cows there are for quote unquote beef. And it even says on signs, like,
I thought all the kids knew that.
I wonder what
this was a little boy, and it was his brother's cow. He actually said, but he was caring for the cow as well. What are they going to tell him? He'll find out one day, right?
What was his reaction to you saying that?
I didn't, I'm like, really? I don't think so. I didn't really want to get into with him. He's too young.
Yeah. Yeah.
Someone else needs to educate this poor little, like, you know, 7-year-old boy. Like, whoa, that's really disconnected if you know, someone growing up on a farm. But yeah, anyways, that was my experience there. You know, in the past couple of years, we have a local group, DXC, Direct Action Everywhere, who have done protests at the peony at the agri fair when they're parading the animals around. And I'm not sure if we talked about what happened last year, but last year there was they went out 2 years ago. We talked about that on the show. I remember I listened to that episode recently, but last year they also went, and they actually, they, as far as I recall, they stormed the agri fair when they were showing the animals. So it was all the 4-H families, mothers and dads and children, and they had a sign up, and I believe it said animal liberation, if I'm not mistaken.
Can I correct you just one second? The animals were not there, and they were actually careful not to, because they didn't want to frighten the animals, but it was where the 4-H parents were and the kids as well. Yes.
Okay. So carry I was on. Mistaken there. So maybe you can tell the story.
Well, I just
better
wanted
than
to
me.
Say that just so that DXC doesn't get a bad name for frightening animals. They actually were very cautious not to do it when they were there, but carry on with your story. Yeah. I know you spoke with Chris.
Yeah, so they were met actually with, as soon as they went out there, they were met with a lot of violence from the DHE parents. So we had Chris, what's Chris's last name again?
Chris Van Breen.
Yeah, exactly. He was one of the protesters there, and I think he was one of the people who was impacted the most, but they were really met with violence. And it was these peaceful vegans who were there just to say, you know, these animals are not for your use, right? These animals don't want to die.
Right.
And they were met with a lot of violence from the parents. They started like physically pushing them, and they all got into a chain apparently, and were like trying to like push them away, right, with mm-hmm. their bodies. They ripped Chris's shirt, mm-hmm. and he took it all in stride. He was very calm about it,
right.
if as I recall.
Right.
And that's sort of how it went, as far as I recall. Like, we saw the videos mm-hmm. and that, and.
The video was just disheartening. I had tears in my eyes. And to think that these parents are not only desensitizing their children to the horrors that happen to animals completely unnecessarily.
They just didn't want them there to like show a different perspective, right?
Right. And I also want to take the time to point out that Direct Action Everywhere has a policy of nonviolence. So mm-hmm. I can assure you that any violence that happened in that crazy brawl was only those who were attacking the DXE members.
And they were like ushered, to say it politely, out.
They were shoved out.
They left. They left.
And to show that side of yourself in front of your children, I think, is questionable as well.
Well, I mean, the whole thing is violence, and then they're totally perpetuating that violence by acting that way in front of their children. I can understand they're being defensive for their children, right? But still, mm-hmm. like, it makes one think, like, someone, like, people like us who are seeing it from the outside and sort of seeing, like, from an outside perspective of what this was really all about. Now, speaking of carnists, that's people who just normalize that eating animals is just natural and good and a thing to do. And speaking of the P&E, mm-hmm. there was an event page for the P&E. There's a Van City Day.
Members Day. And I think it was just yesterday or 2 days ago.
Yeah.
And I get these notifications on Facebook, and of course I take the opportunity to say something.
You're very, very, very vocal on Facebook, on even strangers' pages. And so on this event page where people were just very happy to go to the P&E, right? There's a lot of other stuff there, right?
I know.
You made a comment. What was your comment?
Well, specifically, I made the comment because the P&E was advertising itself as a green event, and I had to take out my cowspiracyfacts.com.
That must have been really offensive to you to see that, right?
It is. Yeah. I mean, if someone's going to argue the angle of environmentalism, I've got something to say, and I will. And that's
what do you
just
have
greenwashing.
To say?
So I just said, what is, I can't remember my words exactly, but I basically said, what is so green about promoting animal agriculture? Check out the film Cowspiracy, which explains how much land use, water use, there is involved in the animal agricultural industry. And then I, of course, recruited all my vegan activist friends on Facebook to comment as well, because we always need backup, because we know there are going to be some nasty comments back and really immature comments about vegans. And actually somebody said, why do the vegans have to come in and ruin all the fun? And what is fun about displaying a bunch of animals who are about to be murdered? How can we stay silent in the face of that? That is betrayal, and I will not. And I hope they learned something from it.
I'm not sure if they did, because I saw that thread. Actually, it was just a couple hours after you had posted it. I haven't gone back to it then, because things like that just actually make me angry.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I understand.
Seeing the ignorance.
I know.
Seeing the carnism that exists. And when people say, you know, all the vegans have to come out and ruin everything. And, oh, someone said, it's not, you know, it's not murder. What did they say? It's not murder when it's an animal?
Yes. Like, he actually said that the definition of murder only included humans. And then Sarah Fox, a good friend of mine, actually pointed out that historically a lot of humans were not considered people worthy of rights, and perhaps one day animals will be. But if you ask me, murder is taking a life. Who does not want to give their life? And that is what happens to animals. Yeah. And I have to say something. And you know, you're right, Allison. I'm sure a lot of people just get even more mad when they read preachy vegans' comments on not killing animals. But excuse me, there are people who are going to read that and go, oh, I didn't know they killed those animals at the fair.
Like my friend who actually did not know. And I just wanted to point out, too, as I said, I was trying to just make comments about each of the animals we were seeing just to educate her a little bit. And I mentioned, I was talking about one of the, it was a goat, really sweet goat. And then I just mentioned, you know, before he sent to slaughter. And then she goes, oh, I hope not. Like,
no, there's no hope. It just is. Yes.
Like, sorry, no, that's happening. That's
I would have
reality.
Said that as loudly as I could to make sure everybody else around me heard. I mean, I'm very strategic with what I do. I like people to know things that they don't want to hear about. And if you can't get them to watch a slaughterhouse video, I've got other ways to get the news out, and I will. You know?
Yeah.
Good for you for doing that.
I mean, I just feel like maybe it made a difference with one person. I had 20 minutes on a break from work, and I tried to do my activism. I don't think DXE did a protest this year, but that's too bad. That's something that I really had wanted to go to last year, too, but I had to work that day. But good for them, because this thing, it really stings my heart whenever the P&E is something that I grew up with. It's, traditionally, like, parents take their kids there. Our parents used to, we used to drive to Vancouver like maybe every year and go to this fair, right, and see the animals. I had no idea what the animals were there for. And like I said, this is like, you know, 30, 40 years later, and it's still happening. The peony's actually been in inception since 1910. So it's a long going thing, but as is the animal agriculture industry, right?
Right. Well, speaking of animal agriculture and the interview that we have later on in the show today with Anita Krines from Toronto Pig Save, the Save movement is growing. And it's not just for pigs, it's for cows and chickens, and it's happening all over the place and growing day by day. And if you're interested in starting your own Save movement, you can check out the Toronto Pig Save webpage and ask them for some advice. And it's really quite simple. You go to a slaughterhouse near you and you witness what's happening to the animals, and you be there in loving kindness in their final moments, and you post that to social media, because like I said, people have got their heads in the sand and they're not always exposed to this. And I can tell you that by posting things to my social media, I have on the one hand lost friends who don't want to see it, and that's fine, good riddance. But I've gained a lot of friends, and I've turned a lot of people into vegans, and they've thanked me for exposing the truth. So I always say, please speak out. Silence is betrayal. And I'm happy to see the Save movement growing.
Yeah, and just even with Anita's trial last week in Toronto, there's been a lot of media covering this, and I saw that they posted a live. They had another vigil this week, right, at the for the pigs slaughterhouse, those pigs on their way to slaughter, and they posted a live Facebook video of everything that was happening at the vigil, and there was a lot of media there.
So that's great.
It's getting the word out.
Although it is scary for Anita, for sure, I don't think we would be getting this media coverage right now on these types of issues, and the trial is bringing so much to light about what happens in factory farms. It's not just focusing on her criminal charge of giving water to pigs, and I'm so grateful for that, and thank you, Anita, for your strength in being the victim of the witch hunt in this situation.
This year, Co-op Radio turns 40. Here's one of our stories.
I'm involved with the reggae show on Saturdays from 6 until 8:30, and I'm also the host of the Extended Mix, and this takes place every first and second Saturday from 11 p.m. until 6:30 a.m. Started here in 1987, a long time ago. When I came here, you know, coming back from Jamaica, the commercial radio stations weren't playing any former reggae music, any former Caribbean music. You couldn't get any reggae, calypso, soca. The only station that I could get a reggae fix from is Co-op Radio with George Barrett on a Saturday, and got me wanting to be a part of Co-op Radio, and I met George. I joined the station as a member, and then I became a programmer on the reggae show myself. It has been a blast. It's, the station does a lot for my community, because when you want to promote anything, any function, Co-op Radio is always there to help. And not only that, when you grew up in the Caribbean, whether it be Jamaica, Trinidad, Barbados, wherever, you know, the music is a big part of our culture. And so Co-op Radio gives that to us, gives us that opportunity to be able to hear our music, hear our language, our different dialects. We can hear it on the radio. And it just gives us that sense of home. A lot of listeners say to me, Louis, on a Saturday evening, you guys make me feel like as if I'm in the tropics, you know? So it also allows us to introduce and spread our culture within the Canadian communities, so which is great also.
And now for some events. Coming up Sunday, September 11th, is the Vancouver March to Close All Slaughterhouses, a peaceful event to promote, support, and further the animal liberation movement. The campaign started in France in 2012, and thousands of people have marched annually in over a dozen cities globally to bring light to the suffering and exploitation of animals. Animals are not merely a commodity to be bought and sold, and there exists no humane way to enslave and violently kill anyone. This is a march in opposition and complete rejection of speciesism, the belief that merely being human entitles us to dictate the lives of other beings without any regard for their suffering. In recent years, much progress has been made within the animal rights movement, and further change will be foreseeable with collective actions such as this march. BMTCAS is a peaceful, all-inclusive, family-friendly, community-based walk. If you oppose slaughterhouses and believe in animal liberation, you're invited to join in on September 11th, 2016 at 12 noon to march in solidarity for the animals. The march will begin and end at the Robson Street side of the Vancouver Art Gallery. The dress code is red, and marchers are encouraged to purchase a VMTCAS shirt to help create a powerful statement. They can be purchased at vmtcas.org.
Are you going to that, Denise?
Yes, I am.
You bought your t-shirt already. You better.
Yes, I have.
I will be there, too.
And you'll be there,
yeah,
too,
I'm
Allison?
Excited.
That's
yeah.
awesome. I really hope there's a lot of people
there. I
think there
it's important.
And get a lot of attention. It's a great time, actually, to get a lot of attention, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
In other events, next Saturday, September 10th at 6:30 at Creekside Community Center in the Olympic Village, which is the north foot of Ontario Street, there will be a free screening of the documentary Earthlings, narrated by Academy Award nominee Joaquin Phoenix and featuring music by Moby. Earthlings is a 95-minute documentary about humankind's absolute economic dependence on animals raised for pets, food, clothing, entertainment, and scientific research. Using hidden cameras and never-before-seen footage, Earthlings chronicles the day-to-day practices in some of the largest industries in the world, all of which rely virtually entirely on animals for profit. Powerful, informative, and thought-provoking, Earthlings is one of the most comprehensive documentaries ever produced on the correlation between nature, animals, and human economic interests. Guest speaker Jordan Reichert, a local politician with the Animal Alliance Environment and Voters Party of Canada, is coming from Victoria to answer questions and discuss animal rights issues in Canada after the screening. This event is a concise way to find out what exactly it is that has inspired millions of people to espouse a vegan lifestyle and support others to do the same. Admission is free, snacks and beverages are complimentary. To reserve your seat, go to www.loveyourfellowearthlings.com.
And are you going to that, Denise?
I'm going to that too.
Oh, great. And Allison?
You know, I personally don't need to see Earthlings, but I wanted to take a friend, but he's not free that day, aww, unfortunately. So I still need to get this friend to watch it. I asked him 2 months ago. He's been too busy until this week, but it's going to happen. He's going to watch it one day.
Well, then, you know, I give a free massage to anybody who watches it and is called into action by it. So you can tell him that.
I did not know that.
Well,
maybe
I shouldn't advertise it on the radio. Okay. I'll be fully booked with free massages.
That's awesome. He'll watch it, but I will give him that as an extra incentive. I'm sure he can use massage.
And he's not allowed to get up and get snacks in the middle of it. I mean, you have to watch the whole 95 minutes and be called into action, and I determine what that is. You tell me what you're doing that called you into action, and I'll decide if that's worthy
that's
of a massage.
Awesome. Good for you.
So actually, Earthlings is the reason why I'm vegan. So that's why we really want to bring our non-vegan friends. It's very powerful.
Yeah, and our guest co-host Daniela is organizing it, right?
She is. So, she's been doing a lot of work on that. And I always have to credit Taylor Freeman with getting me to watch that documentary. And if I hadn't, I probably would not be vegan right now. Mm. So thank you, Taylor. I love you.
If you have an animal-friendly event that you would like to have announced on the show, please send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
And now for some news. A new nonprofit has recently been formed in New York with the mandate of providing animals with legal representation. Against All Odds Animal Alliance was created by attorney Matthew Albert to protect abused animals and also represent those killed by police. Said Albert, "Animals have the most silent voice out of any group and are oftentimes the easiest to get stepped upon." While ALOAA, again that's Against All Odds Animal Alliance, focuses its work on companion animals like cats and dogs, this is a step forward toward recognizing animals as individuals with rights. It also provides a basis to argue the innocence of an animal during a conflict, for example, Harambe the gorilla, who was recently killed at the Cincinnati Zoo.
That was so sad. I don't know how many years it'll be before we see an end to captivity, but that's one of the main animal rights causes that I focus on, especially with aquariums. I just can't believe it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad to see, every time I see a new legal organization for animals, I'm happy to see that.
There aren't enough, but thank you to all those who do it, because I know you could be making much more money doing law in another field, and a lot of these people are working for under $30,000 a year, some of them for free. So
the animals need allies. It's the only social justice movement where it's all made up of allies, right? Because mm-hmm. the animals aren't able to speak to us humans and communicate what they want themselves, and or if they are, humans certainly aren't listening. So it's up to us allies to mm-hmm. fight for them.
Yeah.
As they said, they're the most voiceless, so they need the most protection.
Absolutely.
In other news, researchers in Hungary have found that dogs process words with the brain's left hemisphere and pitch with the right hemisphere, just like humans do. Dogs and humans' evolution split off relatively early, some 95 million years ago, long before dinosaurs disappeared. Thus, it is very likely that many other species also have the mental ability to understand language like dogs and humans do. It's easier to study dogs for this attribute, since they have been bred for thousands of years to interact and socialize with humans, and are thus much more interested in what we have to say. The study involved 13 dogs of 4 different breeds who had to be trained to lie absolutely motionless for 7 minutes, awake and unrestrained, while MRI scans detected their brain activity as they listened to the trainer's voice through headphones. While people who live with dogs may find these results unsurprising, it had previously been assumed in the scientific community that dogs processed language in a way very different from humans.
Yeah, I saw that story about that on the news this week, and what they showed was that, I'm not sure if this is, I think this is what you were saying, Denise, is they put the dogs in an MRI machine. They made them sit very still. It was really cute mm-hmm. watching it on TV. Because the dog's tail was just wagging, but the rest of him was still. Like, he was like a golden retriever, I think, or, you know, one of those dogs that really want to please. And his guardian was saying, "Good boy," or uh-huh. "Good boy," and then showing the difference in brain activity when there was tone and inflection. And what the story said was that they still, and I used to experiment with this with our dogs that we've had as well. Is like, do they just understand the tone, or do they understand the actual words? What it showed was that they actually understood the words without the inflection. So you didn't have to be like, good boy," uh-huh. even just a normal "good boy." That would work.
Yeah,
so
just
they're smart. We underrate the intelligence of animals as a whole.
Right.
I just have to say that all the time.
Yeah, there's more and more studies showing that animals' brains are capable of doing things similar to ours, and it totally makes sense as we evolve together. Even if the brain is completely different, like birds, they are able to use different brain parts to do the same function. So
I would like that study to be done on cats, because I wonder how much my cat just pretends not to understand me.
And I bet you, I think we underestimate the ability of all animals in their brains. And I bet you cats know. Like, I just think, like, I haven't been around many cats, and I'm not a cat person, but from my perspective is they know. Because I know that when dogs don't respond to you, like dogs that I've had, they know still. They're just ignoring you.
I think so. Yeah. Cats are definitely ignorers. I stand there at the door with my cat Ting Ting and I say, go outside. And of course, she's ignoring me. The number of times I say go outside in the 8 years I've had her, I'm sure she knows.
Yeah, she's not. Yeah, she's not that. She's not unintelligent.
Like, no, we forget that they have their own lives. They perceive all kinds of things that we are unable to. It's not like they sit there totally focused on us all the time. They have a life.
I always wonder what they're thinking.
Well, thank you for the news, Denise. And here is our feature interview.
I'm so grateful to have the opportunity to interview someone very dear to me today. One of my animal rights heroes. She's a loving, humble, intelligent, patient, and relentless activist, Anita Kreins, an animal rights activist who is being charged with mischief for giving water to overheated and dehydrated pigs on their way to slaughter. Anita, along with many other dedicated activists belonging to a group called Toronto Pig Save, regularly bear witness to the suffering of pigs as they arrive to a slaughterhouse from long journeys in overcrowded trucks in all weather conditions, having had no food or water for up to 36 hours. The activists meet the trucks as they stop at a traffic light and give water to the pigs, who are often panting heavily and foaming from the mouths. Many pigs are dead on arrival. Anita was criminally charged after an angry dispute with a truck driver who got out of his vehicle to tell her to stop giving water to the pigs, saying, quote, "They're not humans, you dumb freaking broad," after Anita tried to appeal to his compassionate side to give water to those who were desperately needing it. This led to Anita being charged with mischief, the truck driver saying that he was concerned that she was contaminating his product as he didn't know what was in the water. I'd like to point out that the fact that meat products are at risk of being contaminated with bacteria from feces and urine, as well as antibiotic-resistant bacteria, which people are exposed to when consuming their flesh. So this argument by the truck driver and the meat industry itself is laughable to me. Anita, thanks for taking time for an interview today. You must be swamped with media requests right now.
Oh, thanks a lot. It's been amazing, and it's wonderful to be on Animal Voices. I did an interview with my two lawyers today, with Jane Velez Mitchell, and I've been doing other interviews last few days. Like yesterday, I did one with Metro Toronto, and right during the trial, I've had media scrums.
I can imagine, and you're handling yourself really well. I've noticed you're very calm and professional.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it takes a lot of preparation, actually. I've been sort of reading a lot, taking notes, and I find that helps ground me.
That's good advice for fellow activists. Were you nervous about your trial, and what do you think the outcome will be?
I've not been nervous for, like, the last year since my charges, but a couple of days before the actual trial started, I was actually really, really nervous and depressed and anxious. But then, again, what happened was when we drove to the trial, there was just this huge community of people, there was a vigil in support of this case, and there were, like, dozens of people, and all my anxiety left me, and I'm just very grateful for all the outpouring of support. And, you know, it is a huge team effort in fighting this case, and, like, from the two pro bono vegan lawyers I have to our whole social media team. So although, like, I'm a figurehead and sort of arguing this case, it's actually, you know, there's a huge team of people that have made it what it is.
That's awesome. And what are you thinking the outcome of the trial is going to be?
I think the verdict will be not guilty, most likely, because I have really good vegan lawyers. But I'm not too concerned whichever way it goes. I mean, if it's guilty and I have to go to jail, what I think will happen is that people will continue to give water to thirsty animals and they'll go to jail, and it'll be like the civil rights movement. People will commit civil disobedience for doing the right thing until the unjust laws change. If I'm found not guilty, my hope is that the idea that that pigs are property will be challenged in the law. And that, you know, there will be a recognition that pigs are not property, but they're individual sentient beings. They're persons before the law.
Right. That's a good point. I've been following the live tweets that were going on during your trial, and I felt grateful for the amount of detailed information revealed about the agricultural industry, which the public will now be made aware of because of you. Anna Pippis, a lawyer with Farmed Animal Advocacy, pointed out that these criminal charges against you inadvertently puts the meat industry on trial.
That's exactly it. And, you know, Robin Bryce was tweeting for us, like, every few seconds in the courtroom. And what was really interesting is the judge allowed for us to tweet from the courtroom. So, you know, we have a really strong social media team that was able to convey the moment by moment, you know, developments in the courtroom. And even the mass media were following us. And CBC reporter Samantha Craig, she tweeted live from the courtroom as well. There were so many reporters in the courtroom.
That's awesome.
And, you know, and it was incredible in terms of getting and putting animal agriculture on trial.
Right.
My lawyers are tremendous, and you know they the first two witnesses were the truck driver Jeff and the farmer Mr. Van Bokel, and my lawyer James Silver cross examined them, and he revealed through the cross examination that the reason that I was charged was that they found that Toronto Pig Save and our regular vigils were affecting their bottom line, and they had to do something about us. And that's what he found in terms of the cross-examination of Jeff, the truck driver. And through the cross-examination of Mr. Bokel, the factory farmer, they learned about the conditions of the pigs, that the pigs are 4 to 6 months old, going to slaughter. And what was most horrific and sad was to learn about the life of the sows, the mother pigs. They're put in crates, and there's crush bars so they can't even reach the piglets. And they're in the situation, they're pregnant for 3 months, 3 weeks, and 3 days. The farmer kept on repeating that. And the piglets are with the mothers for only 21 days. Then they're taken away. And then the mother sows return without their piglets to an open area, and then they're artificially inseminated within 6 to 8 days, and then they return to the farrowing crate. Then this happens, like, this is the life of a sow, constantly impregnated, pregnant, and, you know, giving birth, and then having her baby stolen away, then after a few more days, impregnated again. So on average, a sow has 2.5 litters, or, you know, 2.5 times a year she gives birth to her babies. And this happens for 3 to 4 years. And so her life is just horrific. And in the wild, pigs live 15 to 20 years and up to even 25 years.
Hmm.
So, and it really put the spotlight on the horrors of factory farming. And also that, you know, the pigs have their teeth cut and their tails crushed. Mm-hmm. So that the tails fall off, because in confined areas, the pigs would be biting each other's tails. Of course, they wouldn't do this in nature, but if they're really packed close together, mm-hmm. The factory farm creates the situation where, you know, there's fighting and other things happening. So what they do is they, you know, cut the teeth and clip the tails without any painkillers.
Right, and this is what happens. It's standard practice in the industry, and I think a lot of the Canadian public don't believe that we are doing this to animals, but we absolutely are, and thank you for the opportunity to shed light on this topic.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, it's incredible the way this pig trial has, you know, shone the light on what happens in the factory farms and in the transport trucks and in the slaughterhouse as well. So my lawyers are also introducing the virtual reality headsets. So they already introduced the film that's used in the virtual reality headsets during my trial last week. But when I testify, we'll be asking the judge to put on a virtual reality headset.
Wow. Do you think the judge will do that?
I think, you know, it's part of my defense in terms of why I do what I do. So my hope is that he will. I think he's a fair-minded judge, so I'm pretty confident that he will do that.
That's awesome. I am so I shouldn't say I'm totally happy this is happening, because it's obviously stressful and a little bit scary for you, but this will be a monumental case, and I know you have the world's attention right now, Anita.
Oh, thank you. It's almost hard to believe, like, how it's unfolded.
Yeah.
But I think it's people are just shocked at, you know, whether they're meat eaters or vegan or vegetarian, that somebody would be charged for giving water to a thirsty animal. So I think it's really resonated with people, and it's a bridge kind of issue where when people learn about it, they're willing to learn more about this case.
And how long have you been vegan, and what brought you to this lifestyle as a vegan animal rights activist?
Well, I went vegetarian and became an animal rights activist in the early 90s, and I only became vegan in 2006. And in both cases, I watched a movie. So in the first case, I watched a film called The Animals Film. It was the first graphic film of its kind made in Britain in the 80s. And when I saw it, there was one particular scene that made me go vegetarian and become an activist was, I mean, these farmers were quote-unquote joking about a rape rack for sows. And I couldn't believe, I wasn't aware of the cruelty involved and the suffering in animal agriculture. And so back then, I didn't even know about veganism. This was in the 90s. And then in 2006, I was teaching at Queen's University, and there was a student group that was influenced by Gary Francione, and I thought they were really radical and very assertive. But eventually that moved me, and I just thought, okay. And I watched a film called The Witness, and then I actually wasn't even aware of the relationship between the veal industry and the milk. And once I learned that, I became vegan. Mm. But bearing witness, like what our group does, Toronto Pig Safe, that changed me even further. It just changed my entire life. Like, animal rights has always been important to me, but only when I adopted Mr. Bean, a beagle whippet, I walked along the shore. This was in 2010. And then I saw the trucks going to a downtown pig slaughterhouse in Toronto. And that sort of changed my life completely. Suddenly animal rights became the number one priority in my life. And I just put everything aside, and I just focused on, you know, working with other people and creating Toronto Pig Safe and committing to three vigils a week, every week since July 2011. Now for the last 5 years, it's been the number one priority in my life, and it will be for the rest of my life.
So what's a typical day for you besides what's going on lately with the trial?
Well, so I'm committed to like coordinating vigils, like weekly vigils. And I used to do three vigils a week. Now I do two. And then I spend a lot of time helping organize other SAVE groups around the world. So we have about 50, 60 SAVE groups. I spend time with social media, like coordinating a team of people as well on that. We also recently put out a SAVE movement leaflet where we include vegan coupons, and we had a door-to-door campaign, and we're distributing them. And the leaflet focuses on how to go vegan rather more than why to go vegan. So like, where do I get my protein, where do I get my calcium, and so forth. We also introduced a virtual reality headset project. One of our social media people, James O'Toole, went with me and others to California for the Farm National Animal Rights Conference, and he experienced the virtual reality headset that Animal Equality has designed, and he was so moved by it. So when he came back, we said, okay, let's do that here. So we ordered 30 headsets, and we're distributing them, 10 to the United Kingdom, 10 to the United States, and 10 here, and we're going to even get more after that. That's another project we have going. We have a Why Love One But Eat the Other Subway Ad campaign that we do every year. We also have a SAVE response team, so we sometimes rescue animals. So we have like about 10 projects that we have ongoing. So my day is usually filled with organizing, but lately it's also been, you know, busy with the pig trial and media interviews and things like that.
Well, thank you for all that you do. That's an incredible dedication. And I want to say to the listeners out there who are considering going vegan, if you do, you get to have friends like this in your life. Right, Anita?
I've met the most amazing people when we do our vigils. Like, I feel my vegan family. When my mother died, about 3 years ago, I had people that were there from the Toronto Pigs Aid movement. So this shows you how important they are to my life. And I think, you know, we use a love-based community organizing approach. And so, you know, we're very inclusive. We socialize together. We, you know, it's more than about just organizing on the ground. We're also helping build community. And, you know, we look after each other. So we're building an animal justice movement. And you know, an altruistic and kind community.
That's great. I have a question for you that our listeners may be curious about. What would you say to people who believe in so-called humane meat?
I went through that that stage, and I went through it because I was ignorant of what really happened. You know, and I've been to a slaughterhouse which supplies. The Healthy Butcher, which, you know, has so-called humane meat, it's a myth, because when you go to the slaughterhouse, what you see is sometimes the pigs may be a little older, like instead of 4 to 6 months old, they're 2 years old, and they may have been outside, but pigs live 15 to 20 years, or 25 in wild, so you're still killing babies or adolescents, and the pigs were so depressed. And they used electric prods on these pigs that became so-called humane meat, electric prods, and they forced them up a ramp onto a bloody kill floor. And in front of each other, they would put stun them with electricity. And they're screaming, and they know what's happening, and they see other pigs dying in front of them. And it's so horrific. There's just no words for it. So. You know, there's no such thing as humane meat because it involves killing. And the highest principle in the universe is thou shalt not kill. And it's the golden rule in treating others as you'd like to be treated. No one would want to be treated that way. Mm-hmm. When, you know, someone, if aliens came and, you know, harvested humans, you know, called it humane meat, everybody would know it was, you know, it's a lie. There's no such thing. So I unfortunately was blinded by that and I spent more than a decade, you know, buying free-range eggs and all that, and I still ate dairy, and, you know, it's so easy to go vegan, so I strongly encourage people to bear witness, and if you come to the cow slaughterhouse vigils, you see the mother cows going to slaughter. They're so majestic, and they're only, like, 3 to 4 years old, and they're so beautiful, and their whole life they've just been suffered and exploited. And I can't tell you how heartbreaking it is to see the mother cows. And, you know, if you're drinking milk, that's the reason that these mothers are going to slaughter at 4 years. They would live 20, 30 years in a sanctuary. So I think it's just ignorance. Like, people just need to bear witness and learn the truth.
Well, I think as a vegan activist myself, when I'm trying to explain to people that dairy is the meat industry, I get so much resistance. So I'll say to anybody, go on YouTube and look up the video called Dairy is Scary, and it tells you everything that happens to the cows in that industry, and it's horrific. It's too much to say in this interview. There's a lot to say about what happens in that industry. You can also check out Mercy for Animals undercover videos, especially the one done at the Chilliwack Dairy Farm.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think that's what's really important is, like, these videos you'd be something that just, you know, animal activists would see. Because of the undercover work of Mercy for Animals, these videos are in the mainstream media. And because of this pig trial, the images that just we saw, like these poor pigs in the trucks, they're finally entering the mainstream. So it's like, it's very exciting to see that, you know, the larger public can now bear witness. At least vicariously through the media coverage.
Thank you so much for all that you're doing, Anita. You are really bringing a lot of attention to a topic that people would like to bury their heads around. And I'm going to wrap up with a tongue-in-cheek question for you that's kind of an inside joke amongst us vegan activists that you're asked way too often. Anita, where do you get your protein?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. So I get it from kale. I get it from nuts and beans. There's you know, no one has ever suffered from a shortage of protein. In fact, we probably eat too much protein. So, I think that's a great question. I mean, that's the first page that we had in our Save Leaflet, because it is the number one question.
It is.
And, just eat your kale and your nuts and soy, you know, hummus and things like that.
It's not all about tofu, is it, Anita? Well, thank you for being a good sport with that question. I know we all roll our eyes every time we hear it. And I think if we had a dollar every time we heard it, we could save all these animals.
Absolutely, yeah. That's true, yeah.
I know you have to get back to a film project you're doing today. Do you want to quickly tell us about that before I let you go?
Well, thank you. Yeah, we're doing a film called Bearing Witness, and that's the number one strategy of what Toronto Take Save and Save movement does. And that just means, like, when you see an animal suffering, you don't turn the other way, but you come close as you can. And so we're covering the pig trial, but also the growth of the Save movement, and just focusing on this one thing, which is called Bearing Witness. And and it's very exciting. We're actually in Hyde Park right now in Toronto, and we're interviewing people and just seeing what they think about whether bearing witness, whether it's okay to turn away, or if they see someone suffering, an animal suffering, like a dog in a hot car, what would they do? And what if the suffering animal is a pig? And then, so we just want to overturn the idea that it's okay to look the other way. And the whole premise of this doc is to make the case that we all have a duty to bear witness.
That's awesome. Thanks so much. And I think the people out there will be very receptive, because you're just so kind and patient when you're discussing these things with people. I know it can be challenging.
Okay. Thank you so much. Such a pleasure.
Okay. Good luck with your project.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM, CFRO, Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Please join us on our next show next Friday, September the 9th. Continuing on the theme of aquariums, we'll be having interviews with Phil Demers, a former animal trainer at Marineland turned whistleblower, and Jeff Matthews, a research consultant, scientist, and environmental activist. They'll be discussing captivity, whistleblowers, slap suits, and cruelty to animals on next week's show. Now, finally for today, we at Animal Voices were greatly and deeply saddened this week to find out about the passing of our former co-host, Jenny Rampel, who worked on the show until a few years ago. She was 2 weeks shy of reaching her 25th birthday. And although young, I don't think I know anyone else who had accomplished so many positive things in such a short amount of time, and certainly in the years that I knew her. When thinking of Jenny, I always held so much admiration and respect for her and everything that she was doing in her life. There aren't many people in the world who I know who proactively use their talents and skills to create and accomplish many things for the greater good and on an ongoing basis as she did. She was always busy in her artistic outlets. Jenny had a vibrance for life, and she didn't let time go to waste. Even when she was seriously ill, she found a way through it by making a very expensive surgery happen to heal her, which most people wouldn't have been able to achieve. She had the determination and ability to take any project from initiation to completion. Jenny was a multi-talented artist and incredibly creative. In fact, she had a business called Creative for Change, and that's what it was. She produced all kinds of creative works to make the world a better place. Photography, music, videos, artwork, and much more. She sang and danced, and in her, innately, I believe, she sought positivity in this crazy world. I greatly valued her time here at Animal Voices and all the contributions that she made to our collective and to the show, putting her time and energy into creating quality content to inspire and inform our listeners on animal issues and veganism. I appreciated all the extra work she did into taking the initiative to make the behind-the-scenes things happen here at the show, such as producing the soundtrack for our show's opening theme, and a lot more as well. I also appreciated her positive communication style, and I really enjoyed working with her and was sorry to see her go when it was time for her to move on to other things. Jenny lived a vegan lifestyle, and in her, I saw a compassionate and dynamic soul. She cared about animals, people, and the earth. She was very sensitive, and she was an activist who made a difference. She was a bright light in the world. I am sorry she was in pain, and I think she left the earth way too soon. Her absence will leave a hole in my heart, and I know she will be missed by many. Thank you, Jenny, for everything that you did for the community, and thank you for your compassion, your positivity, and your dedication.
I have tears in my eyes from that. I chatted with Jenny a few times just on Facebook and never got a chance to meet her, but I definitely feel that she left an impression on me in how sweet and sensitive she was, and we always had really great in-depth conversations about what was going on for her with her suffering with endometriosis and struggles with animal rights activism. And I really wish she hadn't left us so soon. I've had many friends and acquaintances take their lives unexpectedly, so I just want to say to everybody, I'm choking up here. If anyone has feelings of wanting to leave this world, please reach out to a friend and let them know exactly what you're going through. Sometimes people think a Facebook post is something to be ignored, when in reality it is a true call for help. And I hope anyone who hears this today and may see a Facebook post like that responds as though it may be serious. And I have become very direct with my friends when I see things like this, and I will send them a private message and I will say, are you feeling, you know, that seriously depressed that you need me to come over now, or whatever. There is a 1-800 number, 1-800-SUICIDE. So please reach out, and there's help, and maybe we can make it better.
Thank you, Jen. We are closing the show now with a song that Jenny wrote and sang with her band, Hello Harmless. This is a song called Being Alive. The words are very poignant with regards to Jenny's mission in life. Thank you for listening to Animal Voices today. And remember to be kind to all the animals, both human and non-human.